Okay, so this is Avi, and I'm here at the AKA Autonomous Social Center with Jeff Berner, who's playing a show tonight with bandmates at the Artel. Welcome to Kingston.
Thanks a lot.
You're here on your tour, playing music from the new album, which is called Klezmer Mongrels.
That's right. It's a pro-miscegenation record. So,
Pro.
miscegenation, it's the word for the mixing of races.
Okay.
There used to be anti-miscegenation laws on the books in the American South, you know. So, the new American president's parents' marriage would have been illegal in much of America at the time that it took place because of the anti-miscegenation laws.
And then the music is klezmer oriented, so that's where that comes in.
It's klezmer with a whole bunch of other stuff in it as
Yeah.
well, yeah.
Yeah. So the music also isn't pure.
The music is definitely impure, and we hope to keep it that way.
Yeah. So can you talk about the progression of getting to this album from Whiskey Rabbi and The Wedding Dance of the Widow Bride?
Well, I think that the big influence, besides just people's conversations, things that people have told me about their lives and about what they care about, you know, in the bars and stuff like that, is just hanging around with the people who are pursuing a similar path of interest in klezmer music and trying to keep it alive in a vital sort of gutsy kind of way. So we were talking at dinner about Daniel Kahn and the Painted Bird, and there's a guy named Bob Cohen from in his band Denai Capella, and Josh Dolgan in Montreal. You know, there's a bunch of people who are now
So-called,
so-called, and you know, there's a bunch of other people who are doing some amazing stuff. So I've learned things from them. They've sat down and taken time with me to like help me with musical bits and pieces and cultural bits and pieces that I've been trying to pick up. And there's an infinite amount of things to learn about klezmer music, really.
What are some of the ways that those that like process is kind of realized on the new album, do you think?
Just a more detailed understanding of klezmer music. Things like modes and scales and stuff like that has been a big thing. But also, books that they've given me. I mean, this is they. You know, the more glamorous thing was when we did our big trip to Romania with Bob Cohen in 2004 to find out to hear the Gypsy or Roma, it's the right word, I guess, players who used to play in the klezmer bands before the war. That. The work that I've been doing now has been less glamorous. I've been touring around in Europe and Canada and the States, and when I get the chance to tour with these folks, then they teach me things, or they give me books, or they give me records. You know, it's not really quite as adventurous, I guess, but you know, still, I guess hanging out in Berlin with Daniel Kahn is pretty fun anyway.
You were saying it gets you both in trouble a little bit as far as like how klezmer is used to express, what's going on in the world around you and that sort of thing.
The thing I love about Daniel Kahn, and that I try to do also with my stuff as best I can, is he digs into the past to find all these people who had socialist or anarchist or anti-Zionist even ideas that were playing klezmer music and writing klezmer songs about it in Yiddish. You know, 100 years ago, there was like a Yiddish poet, Mikhail Gordon, wrote a thing about how, oh, you all want to have Israel, the country. It just sounds like one big ghetto to me, you know. And like, so this is something that Dan dug up, you know. He's like all into the stuff about the Bund, the Jewish socialist, you know, organization. And so there's all this stuff that's very radical, very left wing, and very kind of controversial, but it's traditional. It's old. People have been doing this for a long time. And by bringing this to people's attention, we counter this idea that, well, there's the traditionalists, and then there's the people who want to dilute or sully the traditions, who are tend to be right, tend to be left wing, weirdos, like that, like only conservatives hold the flame of tradition, and this is a really important thing to just rubbish that idea, and it's because there are all these people living 100 years ago or more who are an awful lot of fun, they wrote all these songs about drinking and screwing and politics and this is a tradition that you could embrace without having to feel like you're, I don't know, crossing over to some weird place you don't believe in or something.
And still relevant, of course. It's a tradition that's relevant for a lot of people,
Sure. I mean, there were these radical group. There was a radical group in London at the turn of the 20th century. They used to sit in front of the office of the head rabbi on the wall, aggressively eating ham sandwiches, to like just to bug him, There was like a bunch of people, in fact, who like met at a house in 40 Berner Street in London called the Berner Street Group, And so there's like, once you reach into the past, you find all kinds of people who are not really that different from the people you know.
One of the themes that I've kind of that's related, I think, to some of the political expression that you said, sort of really rooted in traditional klezmer and from maybe the experience that it came out of, is sort of themes of exile and diaspora, maybe in some ways too. Today you are playing a song here in town, shooting a music video. I can't remember what it's called now.
It's called Luck in Exile.
Luck in Exile, right? Part of the chorus, beautiful song, and just really great playing from everyone. Something, if you start to feel that you've been exiled everywhere you go.
Yeah, burdened by the things you know and running out of chance. Like, that's just saying, it's just drawing a comparison between the way a lot of people just feel generally in modern life. And the way the Jews have, the feeling the Jews have confronted over centuries, and in a way, the Jews were people who because we were landless, our culture was bound in culture, not the land, in books and songs and stories, and that means that we were a lot more modern than a lot of other people, Like we now, everybody is kind of Jewish in a way. Their culture is, who you are is a lot less bound up in the land than it used to be. Thank you. growing up in Canada and doing the Christmas concert every year and the Easter concert every year and having to sing all those songs just because you were in music class and stuff like that. If you were in a mainstream public school in Canada, you still sing about, like, away in a manger and all this
I
other
sing Silent Night for sure.
baloney,
Or at
and
least
like,
it's made to.
and it's like my parents, I guess, just figured, well, deal with it, when we dealt with it, it's no big deal, but it's weird, it's like, I don't think I should have had to do that. They say it's not a Christian country, but it still is, and so we don't, in some ways, there's still that sense of not entirely belonging that I can't shake,
A song that to me really encapsulates a lot of that experience that I think we can draw from Jewish history as well as like current experience, but also I think something that really is relevant to a lot of issues around who has status or I'm speaking of the song Traveler's Curse, which I love. And we actually played it on our first radio show here on Radio 613. We were talking about the Christie Pitts riot in Toronto, and the fact that in a lot of ways it was a response to the fact that there are a lot of immigrants, quote unquote, coming to Toronto, and the backlash against not only Jews but Italians and Ukrainians, etc., and how that's kind of continued, except different groups may be targeted as the new sort of threat to the, security or whatever you want to call it. Could you talk a little bit more about that song? It's just a brilliant thing.
Thanks a lot. I mean, Traveler's Curse is just it's a song. The basic idea is that there is that bad luck comes to those who mistreat traveling or landless people, So it's rooted in a Jewish experience, but it's supposed to sort of translate well to anybody who's having that problem at the border, In particular, I was thinking of gypsies again in Europe, but also the way it was written, just when the big changes with Bush in America and American immigration were happening, where people were going on holiday and getting hauled off of the plane and taken away, if because their skin was the wrong color and stuff like that, So the travel, so the idea is that we in Canada who landed here, Jews and other people who are doing well, most of us came from people who were running away from something, and we landed in a safe place, but it was just lucky. We were lucky to be here, and luck can change, so we shouldn't be too high and mighty about the fact that we live in a stable, relatively safe, prosperous place. We just lucked out, That's the basic idea of the song, I guess. And it's nice that people are responding to that song. It's good.
I think, I mean, part of acknowledging that luck and sort of like the privilege that comes with it is being motivated to, therefore work in solidarity with others who are going through that experience now and who, don't carry that. The privilege that comes from just landing on the correct side of the border, like you said.
Well, that was the impression that I got from my Jewish education, and it was a conservative Jewish education, so I don't, I maybe I misunderstood it, but the basic idea I was given was that the legacy of the Holocaust and other anti-Semitism and persecution for Jews in Canada is that now that we're basically okay, I would say, we have a special responsibility to people who are being kicked around. Not we have special privileges to kick around whoever we'd like because of what happened to us, that we have special responsibilities to look out for other people who are in the same tough spot that we found ourselves in from time to time, you know, and that I really believe strongly in that.
I have been libeled as a wanderer. This is not the case. I have a home. It's just that it's an inconvenient place right now. None is too many of that kind. I overhear you say, you make some markings on the page and stamp and seal my fate. I regret now to inform you who refused to aid my plight. Bad luck will come to those who deny the travelers their rights. All of my pity upon you. All of my pity upon you. My luck can only get better. Yours is bound to be worse. Now I see it upon you, the traveler's curse. Who can deny your moral right to prosperity and order? You fell out of your mother's cunt on the correct side of the border. And your cunt fall gives you all of this and power over me today. But there are forces in this world that can make all that fall away in a second. All of my pity upon you. All of my pity upon you. My luck can only get better. Yours is bound to be worse. Now I see it upon you, the traveler's curse. Pity upon you, all of my pity upon you. My luck can only get better, yours is bound to be worse. Now I see it upon you, the traveler's curse.
Are you actually, Jeff, I don't know if you're from Vancouver or you live
yep,
now.
Yeah, I was born in Vancouver.
Yeah.
My dad was born in Vancouver too.
Yeah. I was wondering, we were talking a little bit earlier in the day about sort of the situation in Vancouver now, and I was wondering if you could just sort of share your thoughts for the listeners about sort of what people are doing to kind of get through the situation, gentrification, other issues, upcoming Olympics, and how you see maybe the importance of community, whether that, I don't know, maybe if your musical community sort of is part of that.
The city itself is now in the hole $1 billion for the Olympic Athletes Village, you know, where they're going to stay. And security costs have ballooned from $200 million to $1 billion. It's the estimate currently. We know it's going to be far above that when they actually pay the bill. And it's just a whole replay of what everybody predicted about the Olympics, you know. And you know, there's a bunch of First Nations groups whose land has not been, you know, BC is interesting because there were no treaties, you know, in BC. The Governor General James Douglas offered to sit down with a number of chiefs to negotiate they showed up and he had them all hung, and that was it. So there's this huge swath of land with no treaty. There's a couple of treaties that the government's managed to negotiate with, I think, two, maybe three bands out of God knows how many, 100, you know, different, you know, nations. And basically, they're just going to let all that slide. They're doing all kinds of development work and land use stuff for the Olympics and for just money, where it's the classic strategy, talk and log. You know, we'll sit down and talk with you, but we continue to buy condos, to build condos on your land, and you know, the situation continues to change on the ground moment by moment as we build more condos on your land, and eventually we'll come around to getting a deal with you, I'm sure.
Sounds a lot like the West Bank.
It's an old strategy, you know, and people use it when they have the military upper hand as the basic thing, you know. And the only thing that really seems to slow it down is public demonstrations, roadblocks, you know, civil action, particularly by the First Nations groups themselves. And I think a lot of times in BC, our role is to just get behind these guys, the First Nations groups that are setting up protests and roadblocks and stuff like that. We just got to go where they are and be part of it, you know, and let them take the lead on it for the most part. And I think that's the major thrust of the protests against the Olympics, is they're going to be led by First Nations activists, and then there's the APC, I think it's the Anti-Poverty Committee, Anti-Poverty Coalition, I can't remember what C stands for, but they're good people. They were involved in the squat in Woodward's, the giant Woodward's building, which is this giant building in the middle of the downtown east side that nobody lives in, despite the fact that we tripled our homeless rate since 1999 in Vancouver. Vancouver is like a crazy, crazy place. It's full of huge wealth and just devastating, despair-ridden poverty and addiction, all just right next to each other. It's like as if we had a pyramid of human sacrifice in the middle of the city or something.
Yeah.
It's madness. And the solution the government is using is they got this strategy where they close down the single-room occupancy houses that these poor people are living in. Some of them are addicts and stuff like that, and a lot of them have HIV or they have, like, you know, other health issues, hepatitis, there's tuberculosis springing up there, bed bugs. And the solution is, well, we're just going to shut these down because they're a health hazard, these buildings. But there's nothing coming, you know, there's nothing new being built to replace them, so God knows what the plan is. You know, the same plan that the feds have for trying to get rid of Insight in Vancouver is, we would prefer that these people would go into an alley and die. It's the essential upshot of all these, the kind of web of policies that, if you look at the final result, is that these people are, we feel that they are kind of a waste of space and we'd like them to disappear. We don't care how it happens, is kind of like the basic. And if somebody dies in an alley, it's a real shame. It's just that it's the direct result of everything we've set in motion.
Oh, Vancouver. Proud host of the 2010 Olympic Games. Yay! You say that because your interests don't converge with the Olympics the way mine do. Because I have written the official theme song of the 2010 Olympic Games. I'm making a great deal of cultural Olympiad money from that, let me tell you. And I'm going to play my theme song now for you. It's about the very specialist part of the budget cuts that paid for the Olympics. The specialist part, of course, being the office that investigated the deaths of children in British Columbia. Gone! But there'll be like speed skating tracks and stuff like that. It's true. I'm not making this up. So this song, not a klezmer song, I'm sorry. It's written in an international style, military marching style. And so everyone all over the world can understand it. And it's called the official theme song of the 2010 Olympic Games in Vancouver, Whistler. The dead children were worth it. I hope you enjoy it. It's a free download on the website until, you know, Vanock shuts me down. Can you just see the athletes marching into the stadium? British Columbia is super proud to sing this welcome song. No. This would be triumphant, you know. Too nuanced. You're used to nuanced playing. For these wonderful Winter Olympic Games we've awaited for so long. Are you terrific? Foreign visitors, we're so glad that you are here for this $10 billion 2-week party that we're putting on this year. Of course, the credit goes to the government when they approve the $12 billion bucks. They cost cut out the office that investigates children's deaths. And the dead children were worth it. The dead children were worth it. The dead children were worth it. The Vancouver Whistler Olympic Games. In a suburban warehouse somewhere sits all 700 files. And frankly, we still have no idea how any of them died. So let's sing a song of welcoming, but first give thanks and shout, hooray! For those sad little lifeless bodies that got us here today. Oh, the dead children were worth it. The dead children were worth it. Dead children were worth it. The Vancouver Whistler Olympic Games. Take one. Very nice.
Thank you.
Inspiring. Well, we're having such a lovely time. We've forgotten all their names. But the weather's getting warmer as we play our little games. So as we sing our anthem one more time, perhaps the cameras will show the little babies' corpses rising up from the melting snow. And singing, the dead children were worth it.
The dead children were worth it. Dead children were worth it. The Vancouver Whistler Olympic Games.
Nicely done.
So this is what's going on in BC. You know, we have this. We've tilted our entire provincial economy. And the planning for our entire social policy towards a 2-week party in February. That's going to cost.
That will be worth it.
So it's going to cost $12 billion at least. And we're going to be deep in the hole, and we're going to have bugger all to show for it. And, you know, it's not even going to raise property values the way that the middle class who voted for the Olympics thought it would, because of, you know, everything's going to hell with that. So I guess that's one source of satisfaction. But the main thing is that these folks are, is that rich people in BC are going to have a massive party with the taxpayers' money and the support of both the NDP and the Liberal Party and the union movement and the business community. And the hangover is going to be incredible. And I'm damned if I'm going to let them have their party. I want to be there on the ground and be some part of spoiling it for them. You know, like, I don't, that sounds spiteful, but it's just like, it's not right. You know, it's not right to plan. If you have a family, you don't plan the family budget around the birthday party. It, you know, like, that's not, that's crazy. It's like, well, we can't buy you new shoes because we need the money for the birthday party. We're going to have so many streamers and balloons that we won't be able to buy food for a week afterwards. It's like, what the hell? Like, what the, it's just madness. It's pure madness. Yeah. But there's a whole industry, right? The Olympic industry. And they are pros. They come into town and they're like the music man. They pitch their big, like, their big project in a big show busy way. And everybody goes, wow, it's going to be fantastic. It's going to really put this town on the map. It's like, I'm not going to Turin for a holiday. Because there was an Olympics a couple of years ago. Maybe somebody else around here is, but that doesn't seem to faze them at all. You know, it's like, it's just wacky, wacky stuff.
So sort of, you were talking about just in response to that, because it's really changing, you know, the live like realities for a lot of people in a lot of different ways. What, and for people in Vancouver, you know, and a lot of people, I guess for people in Vancouver are sort of looking to live there and maintain their community, that there requires, you were calling it social capital.
Yeah.
Financial capital.
If you got to have some kind of capital to live in Vancouver, because it's really bloody expensive. And housing is the big issue. Like, Vancouver and Victoria have the lowest vacancy rates for rental housing in the country. And it means, like, when an apartment comes up, 50 people show up to fill out forms and have credit checks and stuff like that to apply to get to live there, to pay $1,500 a month for a 2-bedroom apartment in the bad part of town.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, who the hell can do that, you know? And so you gotta kind of know somebody who's been in their place for a long time and is moving, or know somebody who knows somebody, or you gotta know somebody who lives in one of the co-ops that got built in the 70s when the federal government still built social housing.
Yeah.
You know, and then maybe you can get on a waiting list for 6 months to a year if you're lucky and get in there. You know, it's, so you gotta have some kind of capital to make it, otherwise you're on the street in Vancouver. You know, it's there's just a lot of money in that place, and I don't know how that could be sustainable. People live, I guess a lot of people live in the burbs and commute for like an hour and a bit. If they got a car, an hour and a half or more if they're taking the terrible transit that we got in Vancouver. Then, you know, and then, but like as a city, it's just like being priced out of ordinary people's range, you know. And there's been an exodus of artists and musicians and stuff like that to Toronto, Hamilton, out here, Kingston. People are from Vancouver. I just met a guy today who was moved out here from Vancouver, and he grew up in Vancouver. You know, it's like, the achievement in the end is this, is just this weird, you know, city of glass, where it's just the very rich and the totally screwed cohabitating.
I know it's probably getting a little close to show time.
So we don't want to miss the four seasons.
Yeah. So maybe you can just tell us a little bit. You've got, again, your bandmates, Tiona Davies and Wayne
Adams.
And maybe you can just tell us what we can expect from the set tonight.
Well, we really, I play a lot solo, and then it's just kind of a more singer-songwriter-y kind of thing. A lot of stories and jokes and ranting and stuff like that. Although I don't talk as much as I've been talking just now, by the way, folks.
There is music.
That wouldn't be much of a show. I hope there'll be songs played in between my little rants here. But when I play with Wayne and Diona, I talk even less between sets. And I really like to play the music with them because we've known each other for a long time and we have this connection as players where we listen to each other and we like to play stuff that they want, people can dance to, and we just go into the music in a way we can express things that you could never express in like an interview or an essay or something like that. Emotions and complex ideas that words can't come close to, and I hope that, and that's what we work towards, and sometimes the magic works and sometimes it doesn't, but we always kind of do our best.
I know. You mean play music from the Klezmer Mongrels?
From Klezmer Mongrels and from Whiskey Rabbi and from The Wedding Dance of the Widow Bride and probably some stray weird covers and stuff like that too.
Right on. Well, definitely really looking forward to the show. And
me too.
Yeah. Hopefully you'll be back soon. And thanks a lot for coming on the show, Jeff.
Thanks for the exposure.
Yeah, appreciate it.
This is based on Isaac Bowell's short story, Bunch. It's about Benya, the king of the gangsters. It's called King of the Gangsters. Sorry, I fucked that up. To live outside the law, you must be vicious. To live inside, you must depend upon the viciousness of strangers. Of the Odessa thugs, Benya was most ambitious. He had a warm, close, intimate relationship with danger. He was the king, the king, the king. He was the king of the gangsters. The new Odessa chief of police said at his sister's wedding, that's when I'll bring young Benya down. By coincidence, during the feast, somebody burned the new Odessa police station to the ground. He was the king,
the king,
the king. He was the king of the gangsters.
He was the king,
the king,
the king.
He was the king of the gangsters. The Goyim always said they were afraid of the Jews, but they act different when it's actually true. He turned every funeral into a parade. We were proud of Benya even when he robbed us too. He was the king,
the king,
the king. He was the king of the gangsters. The king,
the king,
the king. He was the king of the gangsters. Tiona Davies there. You should applaud. In his red sash, he swaggered through the marketplace with a pretty ghetto girlie and his Turkish cutlass. The Red Army shot him in the face so they could build a brand new world without crime or injustice. He was the king, king, the king. He was the king of the gangsters. The king, king, king. He was the king of the gangsters. He was the king of the gangsters. He was the king of the... Occasion is imminent, folk festival or corporate event, funeral or circumcision. I don't want to unduly influence your decision, but this pathetic plasma wedding band is for hire. This pathetic plasma wedding band is for hire. Ready to embody the cultural values to which you aspire. That a klezmer wedding band is for hire. We know how you like your world music, mysterious and vaguely erotic. You don't wanna know the leading of the lyric, that just makes it less exotic. This authentic klezmer wedding band is for hire. This authentic klezmer wedding band is for hire. Ready to embody the cultural values to which you aspire. A better plasma wedding band is for. Oh, what if this was 1923? Oh, how wonderful that would be. If you come to my history class, I'll teach you the Yiddish for kiss my ass. The wedding band is for hire. Hire! The plasma wedding band is for hire. Hire! Ready to embody the cultural values to which you aspire. That a klezmer wedding band is for hire.